Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's healthcare town hall discussion hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley and the California Healthcare Foundation. We're coming to you this evening from the Petit Trianon in downtown San Jose. I'm Gloria Duffy, CEO of the Commonwealth Club and your chair for this evening. The Commonwealth Club would like to extend a special thanks to the California Healthcare Foundation for supporting tonight's program. The Healthcare Foundation is an organization dedicated toward expanding affordable quality healthcare for all socioeconomic levels here in California. Promoting improvements in all sectors of the healthcare industry, the California Healthcare Foundation strives to ensure that the highest level of quality care is given in California. And it gives me great pleasure, therefore, to introduce Dr. Mark Smith, President and CEO of the California Healthcare Foundation, who will introduce our two candidates and act as the moderator for this evening's discussion. Prior to his work at the California Healthcare Foundation, Mark Smith was the Executive Vice President for the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation. He has written and spoken extensively on managed care and the healthcare marketplace, and is a physician who serves as an attending physician of the San Francisco General Hospital AIDS Clinic.
Thank you, Gloria. Thank you and good evening. On behalf of the California Healthcare Foundation and the Commonwealth Club, I'd like to welcome you to tonight's Health Vote 2000 debate featuring candidates for the 15th Congressional District, Republican Assemblyman Jim Kunin and Democratic Assemblyman Mike Honda. Health Vote 2000 is a nonpartisan statewide effort sponsored by the Foundation and the Commonwealth Club to encourage a spirited discussion of healthcare issues during this year's election cycle. And we know that the issue is playing a pivotal role in this year's elections. A recent Field Institute survey on behalf of Health Vote 2000 found that half of all California voters rate healthcare among their most important issues when deciding whom to support for president. More significantly, among undecided voters, 55% plan to make their decisions based on healthcare issues. And of particular interest this evening, the same survey found that more than one in three voters consider healthcare a major issue when casting their vote for Congress. So we hope that Health Vote 2000 can fill an important void by providing objective information to voters statewide. In addition to tonight's debate, we've hosted the United States Surgeon General David Satcher and will soon host Congressman Bill Thomas, Chairman of the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health. We'll also be sponsoring a debate in one of the most hotly contested races in the country, San Diego's 49th Congressional District, where Republican incumbent Brian Bilbray is being challenged by Assemblymember Democrat Susan Davis. With just 3 weeks until Election Day, we're pleased that candidates are addressing some of the most vital health care issues facing our country, including Medicare, prescription drug funding for seniors, managed care reform, and how to decrease the number of uninsured Americans, where this is a particular problem, as you know, in California. These issues have taken center stage in the first two presidential debates and have become major themes for races both for president and the congressional seats. Our objective is to make voters more informed so that they can vote for the candidates that best represent their views. These health care issues affect us all. Whether it's with our aging parents, our children, or ourselves, each and every American is touched by our nation's health care policies. And that's why we're excited and honored to have Assemblyman Jim Kunin and Assemblyman Mike Honda here today to share their health care views directly with you, the voters. At this time, I'd like to introduce the candidates. Republican Assemblyman Jim Kunin has served this community as a member of the state legislature since 1994. He has served as Vice Chairman of the Public Safety Committee, as well as a member of the Education Committee and the Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials Committee. During his tenure, Assemblyman Kunin has been honored as the Girl Scouts Legislator of the Year and received the 1998 Visionary Award from the California Healthcare Institute. Prior to serving in the legislature, Mr. Kunin worked for Applied Materials, a leading Silicon Valley high-tech company, as their corporate affairs manager. He currently resides in the Almaden Valley with his wife, Jennifer, and their two children. Please join me in welcoming Assemblyman Jim Kunin. Assemblyman Mike Honda, the Democratic nominee, has served this community for more than 20 years. He has served as a member of the San Jose City Planning Commission, the San Jose Unified School Board, and the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors. As supervisor, Honda helped increase funding for breast cancer awareness and was a part of Santa Clara County's first Women's Health Conference. In 1996, Mike Honda was elected to the Assembly. Since then, he has served as chairman of the Public Safety Committee, as well as a member of the Education Committee, Revenue and Taxation Committee, and the Public Employees Retirement and Social Security Committee. Assemblyman Honda received the 1999 Legislator of the Year Award from the California Federation of Teachers and was honored for his leadership by the Santa Clara County Breast Cancer Early Detection Project and Women's Health Alliance. He lives with his wife, Jean, in San Jose. They have two grown children. I'm pleased to welcome Assemblyman Mike Honda. Now let me introduce the person who's going to do the heavy lifting tonight. The moderator of tonight's debate, San Jose Mercury News political reporter Hallie Jordan, has been covering California government and politics for more than 13 years. A native of Texas, Ms. Jordan has covered HMO reform, the state budget, needle exchange, patients' rights, and the presidential candidate's viewpoints on health care. Additionally, Ms. Jordan is renowned for her coverage of the Unabomber case, as well as her coverage of statewide initiative campaigns. Please welcome Hallie Jordan.
Good evening and welcome. I'm going to go over the rules for this evening's debate, which I understand is one of several that the two candidates have engaged in, and we appreciate them focusing on health issues tonight. I'm going to be asking a few questions. Each candidate will get 2 minutes to answer it. We'll go back and forth. We'll do this for a little while, and then we will be taking questions from the audience and try to get to as many of those as we possibly can. We do want to leave time for the candidates to have closing statements of 2 minutes each. So I guess we should get started. Let's see, I'm going to start with Assemblyman Kanin, since his name begins with a C, and that comes before an H.
You thought it was a K.
and then Assemblyman Honda will be able to also address this question. A Mercury News poll of Latino voters this year shows that it is more difficult for Latinos to obtain health insurance than it is for the population at large. The survey found that almost 1 in 3 Latino voters say they have trouble obtaining health insurance, that Latino voters earning less than $25,000 a year were less likely to have health insurance, and that the younger Latinos really have trouble obtaining insurance. Latino voters also overwhelmingly think the federal government should guarantee health insurance for every legal resident and citizen. 84% of Latino voters support universal health care, compared to 65% of the general voter population. Both Vice President Al Gore and Texas Governor George Bush have made health care proposals part of their presidential campaigns. They both plan to provide health insurance to more Americans, as everybody wants, but they also stop short of supporting a comprehensive plan to cover everyone. As your role, if you're elected to Congress, what do you see as the best way? What proposal do you have for expanding health care to those who are unable to afford it?
Thanks, Hallie, and welcome to Silicon Valley. Back, she covers it for the Merck in Sacramento. Thank you all for coming. It's a good question and a serious one. Of course, it depends how you define universal, right? I support universal access to a quality health care system. I don't support a government-run healthcare system. There is a number of things that we can do, and there are some encouraging trends right now. For instance, the number of uninsured in America is declining. California is one of 15 states that are leading the way in that regard through some of the more progressive programs we've been able to enact in the state legislature that I've been a part of. For instance, one thing that will help tremendously in the Latino population, but also all Californians, is the Children's Health Insurance Program, the CHIPS program, that is relatively new. One of the things that we're having difficulty on is finding them to sign up and having people come forward. In the case of the Latino population, there may even be some sense of fear. I was one of the few Republicans to oppose Proposition 187. I want everyone in America to have access to health care. You must treat, and our society is better off. So I actually voted for and provided bipartisan support for the Children's Health Insurance Program, which I think will help tremendously in that regard. Another thing is, where do Latinos work, as many of the uninsured right now in our society, with small companies? One of the things that I've tried to do is to understand that small companies don't provide health and care insurance because they're mean and mean-spirited. They don't do it because they can't do it within the margin of profitability. My father-in-law is a retail business owner. He provides health care to his employees. But one of the things that will help is that they can't purchase the product at the economy of scale to make economic sense. We need to allow small companies to pool their resources together to purchase health care. We have a small pilot program in California to do that. It should be expanded. It would do a world of good in covering more people. And finally, I think Santa Clara County has an answer with some of the tobacco money in providing health care for children. That will affect the Latino population. And I think it's one worthy of support because the primary means is to get them signed up for the state program. So those are some ideas that I have.
Thank you. Assemblyman Honda.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank everybody for being here. You chose to be here rather than at home watching baseball or the presidential debates. Shows good taste. I hope we meet your expectations, too. The expectation, I think, of the Hispanic families is well-merited. I think that if we expand health care insurance to the children, and I think it should go to the uninsured adults in the families, too, to expand those programs to them, because when I was reflecting this afternoon, what about my own life? Although I'm not Hispanic, my family was sharecroppers. And at that time, they didn't have health insurance. My father and mother had to make decisions between putting food on the table and trying to make sure that we got rent or, you know, get us health services. And as a result, you know, a lot of us youngsters in our family went without dental care. And I didn't get a full dental care until I was working, where I had a good health plan. So I think that parents are saying that they want this kind of health plan for the youngsters, and it makes sense because it reduces costs in the future. When you don't get health care, your health deteriorates much quickly. And when I was a school principal, a lot of my youngsters did come to school with poor dental care. Their teeth were deteriorating. They were and they just was not fully covered and fully cared for. Their parents loved them, but they had to make choices, and those are the kind of choices I think that parents would rather not make and have their children fully covered. We have to expand the programs because just in this county, we have 69,000 youngsters that are not covered. And the county of Santa Clara, along with the Santa Clara Health Initiative to ensure youngsters with health insurance, is trying to take the kinds of revenues that we have and put them together. And people say that government should be staying out of these kinds of issues, but I have to tell you that government has a role in this issue where they can facilitate and bring different players together to make sure that all the youngsters are covered in this area of health.
Thank you very much. The Sacramento Bee has been running a series this week on the uninsured in California. And one of the issues that they were focusing on is the plight of Californians who are plagued by pre-existing health conditions and are repeatedly turned down by health insurance companies when seeking coverage. Among their findings, people most likely will be denied insurance if they are obese, if they smoke, if they had a heart attack or cancer, even if it's in remission, if they've got a history of clinical depression. The series reports that even those who take a prescription allergy medicine, and it didn't matter if it was, quote, an armload of pill bottles or a single vial of Claritin or Allegra, end quote, automatically they will see a 20% jump in the premiums that they are charged compared to those who aren't suffering from hay fever. And some of the questions they ask can get really personal. To both of you, and we'll start with Assemblyman Honda, you know, what is your position on pre-existing medical conditions, both those that are the result of lifestyles as well as genetic factors? And what do you do for these people who are denied because of these conditions?
Okay. I'm glad you said genetic, because I think that that's the, another area that's coming to the forefront. When people are, when we got in our technology to the point where we can look at our DNA makeup and sort of determine that we have a disposition, predisposition for certain kinds of ailments, that this may make a determination by caregivers or health insurance folks to not to cover you. My position is that that kind of information should be your own. It's part of your privacy. And I believe that denial of health insurance or health care should not be based upon it. If you are denied, then you should have the right to have that the reasons for denial disclosed to you as a consumer. You have that right in order for you to be able to feel that you had some justice in the determination. That kind of a decision should be between the medical doctor and the patient, not by someone else who says that your DNA says that you may end up with cancer or some other kind of ailment. So it should be a privacy issue. And second, if there is a denial based upon some factors, then that those decisions should be disclosed to the client.
Thank you.
Well, I think people who have a genetic condition should be protected. One of the things that provide a practical solution to this is the Kennedy-Kassenbaum Act in Washington that passed last year that dealt with portability of insurance when you lose a job, because that's what often happens. They may have a pre-existing condition and have health insurance, but then lose a job, and then they have the no health insurance and can't get it the next time. The portability bill will allow that more seamless transition, and I strongly support that. I think for those that where it's non-genetic and it's because of habits from smoking, et cetera, we should also have the additional wrinkle of emphasizing prevention, giving people opportunities to stop smoking, to deal with alcohol problems that lead to long-term health care problems. We need to focus in our health care system more on the prevention side, which would save us a tremendous amount of money down the line. We also, though, to solve a lot of these problems, need to emphasize empowering the individual in our society. It's not always the government solution. Why don't we expand medical savings accounts so that citizens and individuals early in their life can begin to save for their health security in the future? Many in Silicon Valley are independent contractors. It's a skill-based economy. They work because of their skill, not for a company, but on their own. And often they take the risk of not having health care insurance because it's so expensive to purchase it as an individual. We should allow for 100% deduction for the cost of health care that they expend throughout the year, or something close to that. It would make a tremendous difference in dealing with these kinds of issues where an individual can take matters into their own hands as well. So it's a partnership. There needs to be some government involvement. What we don't want, though, is a government takeover of our health care system. I don't trust a government bureaucrat any more than an HMO bean counter to make medical decisions for you. I trust doctors, and that's what I've tried to do in my career up in Sacramento.
Thank you, Assemblyman. Let's talk about prescription drugs for seniors. It's a big issue of importance to many, many people. The Republican National Committee has been airing some TV commercials on behalf of Governor Bush attacking Vice President Gore's prescription drug plan. I think they're saying that Al Gore will charge seniors a new $600 a year government access fee. What it really is he has proposed charging up to $25 a month in premiums to help pay for this in certain situations. I think it goes up to $600 in 8 years. And Governor Bush has only come out with a plan pretty recently, and it's basically to let the private insurance companies compete with Medicare in covering prescription drugs for seniors. What is your feeling on these plans, and what would you do?
I would pursue a third way. I think there are flaws in the Gore plan, and I'll also say that there are flaws in the Bush plan as well. To be even-handed about it, neither really solves the problem in a particularly creative way. I have concerns about Al Gore's program because it involves price controls. Price controls will not be good for medical care in America. The only reason it works at all in Canada is because America is south of its border, and those who can afford it come down. What Canadians are denied are breakthrough drug therapies as a result of price controls. The Journal of Law and Economics noted that a third to a half of the cost differential between Canadian and American drugs is because of product liability costs built into the price of the drug in America because of our tort system. So there are many angles on this to make sure prescription drugs are affordable. Here's the third way, and I think it's the bipartisan way. Have a prescription drug plan as a core benefit in Medicare and model it after the plan designed on a bipartisan basis by Senator John Breaux, a Democrat senator, and Congressman Bill Thomas, a Republican from California, who said that the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program provides us with a model to reform Medicare and to provide prescription drugs at a level that would cover the entire population. It's the plan that members of Congress get. If it's good enough for members of Congress, isn't it good enough for America's seniors? I think so. It is the third way that I think would be the best way for America.
Assemblyman Honda, what is your proposal and position?
Well, the prescription drug has not become an issue until more recently when we realized that there's an age wave upon us. I'm part of that age wave. And I think that we have to be very careful of how we craft the solution. And, you know, people are going to bash government, but you know what? We are part of that government, and we're part of that process. And to talk about price controls and saying that the Democratic program is going to end up with price controls, people have to read what the plan is about. People are saying that prices will be determined by negotiations with the companies. Just like HMOs and other health plans negotiated, Medicare, with all of its clients and participants, because of that number as other programs, they can negotiate the same way. It's the competitive way of doing it. So I don't think that price control is going to become an issue. And then you talk about federal employees and those programs. You have to also remember that a lot of these people are not part of any kind of a program right now. They're not part of any program. And so to pull them in and say you can be part of this program, I think is short-sighted because it's not including all the other issues. It's really clear what Gore is saying. The prescription drug program should be an additional program that's added to modernize Medicare, and that's what you should do. You add it, but not for certain seniors, but for all seniors. And that subsidization will be done on a voluntary basis also. And you can take care of people with major medicals after they pay a certain amount of price, that I think is $5,000. So the program is viable. It should be for all seniors, and not just a few.
Thank you, Assemblyman. California has got a big chunk of the global settlement on the tobacco settlement, and it's been a big issue as far as how those funds are going to be spent, with counties in the state kind of going at it on who should get how much and what those programs should be. Assemblyman Honda, how do you think that the tobacco fund should be spent?
I think this is where the distinction between the two candidates can be made. So I supported the tobacco money to be put into health programs and that the local government will determine what that would be. And one of the best examples we have of that is the current initiative here in Santa Clara County, where we have the Santa Clara County Children's Health Insurance Initiative, where the county and the city eventually and other programs will get together and share the resources to make sure that this county, with the 69,000 youngsters, will be fully insured and covered. That is a magnificent way of using this kind of revenue. That's a magnificent vision, but it's also a moral issue that we should be moving forward to do that. While we have the resources, let's take care of these youngsters with this revenue. It was health related, then it should be health applicated.
I have always said, quite publicly and on the floor of the Assembly, that this tobacco-related money that is coming as a windfall to state and local governments ought to have as their nexus health care issues. At the state level, I have said it ought to be used for tobacco-related illnesses, because the money does run out at some point, so you might as well tie it to a nexus as we continue to discourage people from smoking. We treat those tobacco-related illnesses in our county and hospitals, and those will dwindle over time as the money also ends at a date certain, too, from the settlement agreement. This isn't money forever. So I do believe that it should be used for health care. At the local level, I was one of I was the only Republican in the state assembly to support the Rob Reiner tobacco tax to be used for flexibility. Remember, there's three pots of tobacco money. There's the Prop 99 money that we passed for advertising. There's the Prop 10 money that goes for children's services. That's the Rob Reiner one I'm talking about. Then there's the settlement money. Now, in Santa Clara County, it's their right to use the settlement money for what they view as the top priority. I've now read the details of the local initiative, and I think there's strong merit to it, because the primary emphasis in that plan is to simply sign up those who are eligible for the Children's Health Insurance Program in California that we've already passed and that I strongly supported. In fact, they were saying over two-thirds or three-quarters of those children who are uninsured in this county are eligible for the state program. They just haven't signed up for it. So a big piece of their initiative is to get those children signed up, and I think there's great merit to that.
Let me ask a follow-up on that, because you brought up the nexus of the tobacco funds going for, as you both did. Yeah,
there's three pots of money.
Right.
I need to remember
On the Rob Reiner Prop 10, you answered that you've already said that you did support it.
Yeah.
It was criticized by some people, some smokers, who have since quit.
We've seen you, Hallie.
We walk around the Capitol.
Well, but there was concern that this is the beginning of a slippery slope. That if you tax the smokers to pay for something that's not tobacco related, I mean, it was going to children's care and pre school. Types of programs, good things, but why should smokers be the only ones to pay for it? If it's that good of a program, why shouldn't the general population at large be taxed? Can you talk about the nexus there?
Generally, that would be true. I quizzed those who were organizing the Rob Reiner Initiative about the very question, and the response was fairly compelling. The response was that there is very hard data that when you raise the price of the pack of cigarettes, smoking declines. We have set as a public goal to reduce smoking in our society. I mean, it's typical government, right? It works at a cross purpose. We subsidize tobacco farmers with millions of your tax dollars, and then we spend millions to discourage people from smoking. We should end the tobacco subsidy for tobacco farmers, shouldn't we? We should also discourage people from smoking. The price of the product happens to have that as a result. The fact is children's asthma incidences have increased dramatically. Part of that is the result of what smokers contribute, not others, to that problem. So, I felt that it was a modest enough initiative, and there's a world of good. If we're going to make welfare reform stick, and I was a stickler for welfare reform, we're going to have to keep working parents in jobs. Quality child care is going to be a piece of it. A big chunk of that money goes for that. Governor Davis vetoed one of my bills to improve salaries for child care workers. The Rob Reiner Initiative can help fund some of that and make up for the governor's mistake in vetoing my bill.
Thank you. Assemblyman Honda, how did you vote on Prop 10, and what is your feeling about
that? I supported it, but just a comment. If the position was that the money should go to smoke-related issues, the health care initiative here is for children to be insured,
right.
Period. I'm not sure if that's smoke-related, but I think it's child-oriented and making sure that their health care is taken care of. The nexus, I'm not sure that smoking has declined among young people. I think statistics would tell you that smoking has not declined among young people. And if we're going to be organizing some of our initiatives, then we should be looking at how do we organize preventative and educational programs around good choices and related to your health. When I was a science teacher, I used to take cross-sections of lungs and let the youngsters determine for themselves whether smoking was healthy for them or not. And all they had to look at was the cells of a person who was deceased because of smoking and cancer and a healthy one. Once they looked at that, they started to internalize some of their behavior, and eventually someone will quit. But at least they have more knowledge and education to make a better choice. It's about choice. And I don't know whether there was a cessation of cigarette smoking among youngsters, but I think that we should focus in on youngsters and make sure that they don't become smoking adults. And as an ex-smoker, I understand.
And I don't want to obsess on tobacco or smoking, but
let's go for it.
I have one more question.
You could take a break right now if you like.
About tobacco stock. Now, the California Public Employees stock. The California Public Employees Retirement System, which is the nation's largest public employee pension fund, yesterday decided to sell the tobacco stock in its biggest portfolio, saying an unprecedented amount of litigation and regulation made the industry a bad investment. The board voted 7-5 to divest about $525 million in stock it holds in tobacco companies in its passively managed portfolios. Today, the Investment Advisory Committee of the University of California Board of Regents was meeting also to discuss excluding certain industries, including tobacco companies, from their index funds in which the UC system invests. You know, are we taking political correctness too far? Should they, bottom line, be profit, or should it be the public health or...
Right. Okay. I understand the question. I was chair of the Public Employee Retirement System and state teacher retirement system when this issue first came up. It was Assemblyman Knox that brought it up, and I supported that issue. And he didn't say that we want to divest ourselves with cigarettes because it was a bad thing to do. He said there's a lawsuit out there that's going to make a critical impact on our investment. And if we don't look at that as an investment issue, then we're missing the boat. And over 2 years, it was proven right. And this year, it came back again, and we supported it again. And although there was some discussion among the board members and among our committee, we moved it forward because it did make sense again. Had we done it when Mr. Knox had put it forward, we would not have lost some of the revenue. So it was a good decision then, it was a good decision now. It's not about, you know, cigarette bad or good. In this case, the PERS folks and the STIRS folks had an actuarial responsibility to determine whether it was a good investment or not, whether to continue with it or not, and they determined after 2 years of that it was time to pull out.
From how you described their decision to de-invest in those stocks, it sounds sound because it was based on a financial judgment on what would provide the best return to public employees. So I think that's sound. I think it gets a little dangerous when the legislature decides to impose its own will on financial decisions for funds like that. I think it should be left to the board to decide and make sound economic investments, and I think divesting made sense in that case. I don't take tobacco money in my political campaigns. I never have. And that's a decision I make for sound reasons. But in the case of the board itself, it sounds like it is not taking political correctness too far. It sounds like they did it based on sound reason, given the economic environment, the litigation environment. And very quickly on the nexus, the only reason I brought it up is the different pools of money. I said the state portion should be used for health care. Governor Davis believes it should be put into the general fund. It was a dispute that we had. I don't believe it should go into the general fund. That money should go for health care, and we had a vote in the legislature on that. So don't let it be said that any party has a monopoly on the truth on this issue.
I think at this point we're going to go ahead and try to get some of the questions that the audience has submitted answered. So we'll start with you, Assemblyman Kinnean. This question is, health care is the most regulated industry in the country. What would you do to streamline or reduce regulations and reporting, and therefore all the administrative costs, yeah, while maintaining the government's need to know how its money is being spent?
Yeah. You know, one thing that we need to do over the long term is provide people more choices. I talked about medical savings account. I talked about 100% deductions for self-employed workers. We should also give people a chance to secure their retirement through blowing off the caps on IRAs and 401ks. Those are long-term solutions that can make people whole by planning early. But in the case of administrative costs, I mean, administrative costs account for between 15% and 20% of the health care dollar. One of the interesting phenomenons is the potential for the internet technology and computer technology to vastly reduce administrative costs in healthcare. It can do it by more reliable information for physicians who often are not necessarily in the know of the latest medical breakthroughs or treatment options for their patients. The Internet is providing that much more for physicians. Also, economies of scale. We're seeing hospitals, doctors' office begin to employ Internet technology to contract out some of the administrative services, billing services, some of the financial management of the healthcare institution. It's going to reap tremendous rewards. Dr. Tyson up in Berkeley, who worked in the Clinton administration, wrote an excellent article in Newsweek about the potential for Internet technology to save the healthcare dollar that we can then reinvest in actual healthcare. That's what we need to get focused on, is providing those incentives for our critical care units, our hospitals, our community care clinics that serve much of our minority community, and have it into a network for physicians and the administration to leverage that and reduce administrative costs. HICVA needs to be reformed. I mean, the process delays in complaints in Medicare are legion. 310 days, I think, is the average processing time for a complaint to HICVA for a Medicare person. That's not right. That needs to be massively reformed to reduce the administrative burden in that program alone. So there's several ideas that I have and will work for if I'm elected to the Congress.
Well, if you talk about HICVA and its administrative costs, it's about 2%. You look at HMOs, they're about 7, 8, 9%, as high as 10%. So, you know, you're talking about efficiency and cost. HICVA is probably more efficient. But the term regulation, you know, public policymakers like ourselves, we're into regulation. But the question is how, when, and why? How, when, and why? If you want to get rid of bureaucratic levels where you have to do a lot of paperwork, you can take the tools of technology and apply that. That'll make it more efficient. People may lose jobs, but I don't think so. People will be retrained for other jobs. But let's talk about patients' bill of rights. That's another regulation. You know, when you have no regulation, sometimes folks get run amok. And because things went amok, we had to go in there and try to get some control over some of the issues. So there's a policy issue here of recreating and recapturing confidence of the public. And that policy has to be understood, that when the public loses confidence in healthcare, it's detrimental. And so we have to be able to go back and restore the doctor-patient relationship and making sure that medical decisions are not made by HMO accountants. And holding HMOs accountable for adverse medical decisions, establishing a system of external review. And then covering all Americans in health plans, not just a select few, and HMOs must be disclosing reasons for denial of health care. Those are regulations. And I think that they're good regulations. The state of California has done them. People are asking for it at the federal level. And what it really means is that the patient, the consumer, is protected. If we focus on who the regulation is about and who the regulation is for, then I think that we can stay on track and make sure that our people are well served.
Assemblyman Honda, this one starts with you. To what extent should the ability to pay govern payment of health care, especially in light of our progressive tax system? Specifically, shouldn't higher income persons pay a portion of Medicare in any prescription drug program?
What was the last
shouldn't
point?
Who?
Shouldn't what?
Shouldn't the higher income persons pay a portion of Medicare and any prescription drug program?
Well, higher-income folks probably have more choices, and Medicare has within its system more choices. My mom has Medicare, but she has a PPO. That's a choice she made. And she gets pretty good prescription drug benefits, but it's going to go up next year because of the price. So she's going to have to pay. There's going to be a co-payment where right now she's not having co-payments. She's not looking forward to it, but it's still better than nothing. $25 a month, she can handle it. There's a lot of people who have very little income. To answer your question, the Gore plan is that all seniors should be able to have access to prescription drugs and Medicare services. And it's not to say that it's all free. It's voluntary. And there is some subsidization with Gore's plan. So, because of income, people should not be denied that kind of service. We can figure it out.
The current administration's plan does include price controls. Look, here's the truth. 65% of seniors today have a prescription drug plan. 35% do not. We need to have a prescription drug plan as a core benefit, and it needs to be focused on where there are real trade-offs. We should never in America allow a situation where a senior has to choose between food on the table and their prescription drug to stay healthy. That's not right, and that problem is solvable. And it's solvable within the rubric of the bipartisan plan by Senator Breaux and Congressman Thomas. That's what we should pursue. Let's solve a problem instead of, blaming each other and finger-pointing. I remember back in 1992 President Clinton talking about providing a prescription drug benefit plan for seniors, and I remember in his reelection talking about that as well, and now all of a sudden we're talking about it again. The problem is solvable on a bipartisan basis if cooler heads will prevail. I have experience as a moderate Republican in working with both sides on these kinds of progressive issues. I think there are some solutions that are bipartisan in the Congress that will solve the real problem that's out there, and I will work hard to do that if I'm elected to the United States Congress.
Thank you very much. Here's another question for you. Would you support legislation that phased out medical insurance companies that are publicly traded and or for profit?
I'm sorry.
Would you support legislation that eliminates medical insurance companies that are for profit or publicly traded?
No. I don't believe that profit is a dirty word, and I think that it can actually lead to some efficiencies. I do think that consumers are going to choose companies. For instance, I chose a nonprofit, Lifeguard. It's a nonprofit company because I analyzed it and I chose as a consumer that trade-off as opposed to a for-profit because I was concerned about some of the allocation of the resources not being put back into health care. But I don't believe that government should dictate the terms. I think what government should do is provide more choices to people, provide more opportunities for individuals to plan for their future. And there is a role for government in process reforms. I supported the toughest patient's bill of rights in America in the California legislature, a right to a second opinion, a right to independent review. Those are process reforms. I supported a right to sue an HMO. I'm a strong tort reform guy, but I'll tell you, I don't believe in special interest carve-outs for one type of corporation that no other type of corporation receives. So I voted for that and provided crucial bipartisan support. These are the things that will reinstill people's confidence. And I think heavy-handed legislation like that is if government can again control and put caps and put price controls is the wrong way to go. And will only lead to more government control over our lives, particularly our health care lives, which I think would be a mistake.
Assemblyman Honda.
I don't know why we would want to prohibit the for-profits. I mean, they have a function. I think that's clear. I think that price control, again, when you talk about price control, I don't see anywhere in the program where price control is coming in. What folks are saying is that utilize the numbers of people in Medicare as part of your bargaining piece, just like HMOs and other health programs do, to determine the price. That's competitive. That's what the other folks are doing, and that's what the program is suggesting.
Okay, Assemblyman Honda, what would be your very first health care initiative if you were elected, and what would be your strategy to get it accomplished?
That's a good question. There's so many things to do out there. One of the things I've done is, on the Board of Supervisors, when I became chair, is to start the initiative of looking into women's health care. And we did a women's summit. And what we found out was that there are women who, between the ages of 45, 50 years old to 65, pre-Social Security, pre-Medicare, are women who spent their lives taking care of their children and their spouses to the neglect of their own health. And we also found that if we looked into it further, they were isolated in terms of information, diagnosis, and ultimately treatment. I think that we need to look at these kinds of arenas where historically we have been misled or we went on the wrong path, and try to readjust ourselves. So I think that issues around women's health, healthcare, and treatment. Treatment is the ultimate piece that we have to be able to accomplish, and we haven't been able to do that adequately, and I think that that's an issue that we should look at.
You know, it's always tough to single out one issue because there's several things you want to try to do, but if there was one initiative above all others that I would want to pursue, it would be to finally pass a tough patient's bill of rights in the United States Congress. California's legislature showed the way. I was part of a key bipartisan group to make that program bipartisan. In the federal level, there's a very important vehicle. It's named after Charlie Norwood, a Republican and a physician, and John Dingell, the ranking member on the Commerce Committee in Congress. It's a bipartisan plan that includes many of the process reforms, a tough patient's bill of rights, and I will provide crucial bipartisan support for that. I think we have to get that done, and I think there will be a world of confidence. A lot of us have health care. We're confident in it. It's a pretty good health care plan. But, you know, every time we hear the egregious case, we all say, there but by the grace of God, go I. These process reforms will take that fear from us and I think do a world of good. You know, we got to stand up to the big insurance companies and HMO bean counters, and we need to stand up to those who all of a sudden want government to control all of the decisions. Again, I will pursue a more centrist path in that regard and pass a tough patient's bill of rights. I mean, there are so many other things. I also think we can solve the prescription drug benefit program for seniors that are really having tough trade-offs and expand it and other issues.
Y'all both have made a reference to this, but if you could, you know, maybe talk a little bit more about supporting...
This isn't another smoking question.
No, it's not a smoking question. I'm done with that. Supporting the ability of patients to sue HMOs. Now, I know there was some question about who supported the toughest patients' rights bill. Can you talk about what you did, and then Assemblyman Honda, you also?
Sure. It's come up in a couple of different sessions. In the first year, there was a more extreme version of a right to sue I had some concerns with. For instance, I wanted to cap some of the punitive damages. They were known as the Kanin Amendments, so they were modeled after how we protect physicians today through MICRA at $250,000 to ensure that we're not running doctors out of the healthcare business and they can continue to practice medicine. I thought that having a complementary provision in the right to sue an HMO would be important to do. The fact is it came back in the next session, and I provided the crucial bipartisan support, was one of a small group of Republicans to vote for a right to sue. The toughest in America, as Gray Davis has called it, this is a patient's bill of rights with teeth. So the key is what was the result of a couple of years of debate? And the result was a very good patient's bill of rights that includes a right to sue in California. And I supported that. And I want you to know that I did.
Assemblyman Honda?
I think ultimately we ended up in the same place. How we got to that point, I think people have to sort of research our voting records. You know, there was a HMO patient's right to sue the HMOs for injuries caused by wrongful denial of coverage. That was AB 2436. And that was a vote that we took in 98. I voted to support that. There was a basic fairness HMO issue where we wanted to make sure that HMO disclosed the reasons for coverage denials, that they should disclose that. That was AB 2048 also. And I voted for that. I think that we need to look at the history of our voting patterns, then ask ourselves, what are the principles that people have when they look at issues, and what principles do they apply? Are they consistent over time? Because you're not going to be there every day when we're working in the Assembly or in Congress. So you have to have the confidence that we have principled decision-making processes and that it's principled. You know, solutions can be compromised, but if you don't have a principle by which you make a decision, then we compromise the electorate.
In the assembly where you both have been serving, you know how Sacramento is. There is a lot of cooperation and bipartisan work that is done. My understanding in Washington, D.C., it can get a little bit testier. And that as a congressperson or member of Congress, you really are pressured into voting the party line. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what both of you would be maybe forced to support your presidential candidates' proposals on health care? What is it that you like about your presidential candidates, and what is it that you dislike about the others, the main points? And that would start with you, Senator.
Okay, if we talk about prescription drugs, it's for all seniors. It's not for a few. And the other is just for low income, and then everybody else relegated to the insurance companies. I think that that's not adequate, because when we talk about seniors, all seniors should be able to acquire on a voluntary basis prescription drugs. I think that over time, it was mentioned that in 1992 Clinton had started his health initiatives, and in 92, 93, there was an interest. And there was also an interest in balancing the budget. And when the votes came, only the Democrats voted. And today we enjoy the courageous vote that they took, because our budget is flush and we're able to make decisions in terms of investing. But you go back to 94, then interest in health care waned. And I cite the reference not only from my experience, but you can look at the research that was done by this group who's hosting us tonight. It waned. And all of a sudden, the interest is back again this year. And it should be. It should have never waned. And so I think that when you talk about policy, you talk about government's role versus privatization, when you look at privatization, you look at costs, and you try to determine that cost, that's a slippery slope. And I think that government has a positive role to maintain a reduction in costs and availability to all seniors.
Mike, respectfully, you must be the only one in Silicon Valley who believes that government created today's current prosperity. Entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley created this prosperity. It was the fact that the Democrat president was unable to spend as much, and the Republicans were unable to tax cut too deeply, frankly, that has led to the long-term prosperity and the building up of surpluses. We have been able to rein in the impulses at both ends of the spectrum that has created this prosperity overall. But ultimately, it is the private sector that creates capital and wealth creation, not government. They spend your money. And let me say that that's where I think there are some principled agreements with Governor Bush. It's our view of government and a more limited role for government. We both believe that the individual is preeminent, not government. I have sharp differences with him. I'm pro-choice. I've supported strong gun control. I have a strong environmental record that I'm very proud of. You know, it doesn't get any testier, Hallie, as you'll remember, is 1995. In my first term, I served under four speakers of the assembly. That was an intense experience. My party was in control in 1996. There were assaults on a woman's right to choose, a crucial health care issue. And time and again, an amendment would come up to take away a woman's right to choose. That very same year, Planned Parenthood named me Legislator of the Year. Planned Parenthood hasn't taken a stand in this race. They think we're both pro-choice. But it's ironic, isn't it, that the Republican nominee was chosen as Legislator of the Year for extraordinary leadership on the issue in a given year, when it was tremendous pressure to cave in and to vote the party line. And we showed that a Republican majority that is narrowly cast could be a pro-choice majority as well. Bruce McPherson and Steve Kuykendall and myself and Brooks Firestone and Marilyn Brewer showed that that could be the case. So, you know, only one candidate in this race has stood up to powerful groups in his own party. I've taken on the gun lobby. I've taken on anti-choice groups at crucial times. And I'm proud of that independence, and I think people respect that kind of principled leadership instead of always voting the party line. The next Congress, it doesn't matter who controls it, Democrats or Republicans, ultimately it's going to be a narrowly cast majority, and moderates are the ones who are going to have the balance of power. I think that's compelling, and I would refer you to both the San Jose Mercury News and the San Francisco Chronicle editorials on this race on that very point.
We've discussed this a little bit, but we've got another question from a member of the audience on it, and I think it is important. The question reads, especially with the privacy concerns with the Internet in this area. I mean, we see a lot of concerns about, you know, the disclosure of personal information, that type of thing. The question is, I have a bipolar disorder. This is a mental illness. I never tell my employer or my coworkers of my illness due to the stigma, and I believe that I would be passed over for promotion. This leads me to not sign up for company-sponsored health insurance because this person is afraid their employer would find out. What would you do about this?
I would protect their medical privacy, period. And let me say, in the area of mental health, I supported the bill to give mental health parity because bipolar is a physical-based illness. It is the chemical composition of the brain. It is scientifically now determined to be physical-related. It seems to me that that ought to be covered under health care plans. The costs were incremental, and I voted for Helen Thompson's bill two sessions ago to do that. As well as a bill in a vehicle that she had this year dealing with mental health. But strongly, I would protect her medical privacy, and I wanted her to know that I believe bipolar should be covered by health plans, and I voted that way in the legislature.
Thank you. Assemblyman Honda?
I'd protect that person's right to privacy, the medical information, financial information, and personal identity information. And when you talk about that, you have to also understand that corporations engage in a lot of activities where they can trade information within themselves. So we have to be able to build firewalls between the different sectors so that the information is not shared within their own corporations. I think that that's a primary thing that we want to be able to do. And privacy is a big issue, and it's not a simple one. And so I think that, you know, part of government's role is to facilitate and sit down with the members of our communities and talk about how do we go about addressing this interesting, provocative, and very personal issue of privacy.
Thank you. We want to leave enough time for a two-minute closing. So real quick, the last question, Assemblyman Honda, if we want to find out more information on your views of health care, where can we find it on the Internet?
You can find it on my website, MikeHonda.com.
Mike? I'm sorry,
MikeHonda.com. It's simple because I have to remember it.
Assemblyman Kanine?
Kanine.com. Click on the issues tab, go to healthcare, and I think you'll find a very logical layout and a number of the views that I expressed tonight. I hope and I encourage you to visit our websites.
Thank you.
May I make another comment on that?
Perhaps that can be, you can address that in the closing, which we need to go to.
Sure.
And Assemblyman Honda, you start this time.
Okay. There's already a program put together by the current administration, and part of it was the privacy issue in medicine and Medicare also. So they've been working on it for about 4 years now, the regulations, and I think that that's probably something that you might want to look at. The implementation is going to be interesting because when you implement something new, glitches will occur, so we have to be prepared to make adjustments on those. Let me just close by thanking all of you for putting this activity together. I think it was helpful. It was helpful for me. I always learn something new. And I just wanted to leave you with this idea that part of public policy is based upon people's background and experience, how broad it is and how deep it is and how varied it is, because public policy is a conversion, is a translation of personal experiences. We talk about health. You know, it sort of reminded me the experience my parents had to go through to make choices, and then what us as youngsters had to go through without really realizing the impact of lack of health care. And so as a school teacher, and as a school person, it became very evident for me that having a school nurse on site, making sure that youngsters are healthy so they can come to school and learn, to make sure that programs like the lead paint issue in the state, that we don't wait till youngsters get sick before we turn them over to a pediatrician or to a healthcare team, that we go out and seek and reach out where we know things are occurring. Those are the kinds of things that make a difference in terms of my experience and my background. You have to be a proactive, have to be a doer, and coming from a background like myself who's experienced the mistakes of government but have a profound interest in creating government that works for people and that we work on truths and facts and that we do things that are good for people, that's my commitment as a person in public policy. And then having been in Peace Corps for 2 years, I've learned that language and culture is important. And I went to Asia with a group of folks here to establish a relationship in Taiwan between Silicon Valley and Hsinchu County, and then gone through China. And what we've been able to share with them is that Silicon Valley is not about a geographic area. It's about a frame of mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your close, please, Assemblyman.
Very briefly, to you, to give you an example, you have health care coverage. You have certain ailments. Then that company has a broader umbrella, and they want to share your medical information with another unit to sell you another product. And they want to base the, say, life insurance product and the price of that because of your medical information. What I would do is bifurcate that they're unable to share that medical among the units within that company for that particular purpose. That's the answer. Thank you again for coming tonight. I appreciate it. I think you've seen the both of us, and it doesn't mean one person's good or one person's bad. We just have a different vision, I think, particularly in healthcare and in a variety of issues. To me, this is the fundamental question. Should you or should the government decide the most important decisions in your life? I believe that the most important things in our lives are those personal things, your individual life, your family, your children, and I trust you to make those kinds of choices. If you elect me to the Congress, what you get is a tough fiscal conservative. I'm stingy with other people's money. I'm unafraid to vote against something that has a great sounding title but won't solve the problem. And I'm also a moderate on social issues. I've been strongly pro-choice. I have a strong environmental record. I have a strong record in protecting us from gun violence. All of those kinds of things, I think, will make me a good representative for our area. I've worked at a high technology company. In the case of healthcare, I know elder care is becoming as important as child care, isn't it? We have obligations at both ends of the spectrum. I know I do, with a father who had a severe stroke 7 years ago, who's paralyzed without speech, whose family income is a school teacher's salary from my mom and Social Security. I would never do anything to jeopardize their security and Social Security. So I think what you get is someone who has been independent of powerful groups in their own party and will do the right principled thing for you right here in Silicon Valley. Thank you again for attending. Doctor?
Well, polls say that health care is of high importance to the voters, especially here in the 15th Congressional District. Judging by tonight, the interest is high. The questions were both well-informed and tough. Last week, IBM President Lou Gerstner gave a speech at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, in which he referred to education reform as being like a unicorn that appears every 4 years at the time of the presidential election debates and then disappears for 4 years. Healthcare reform could be thought of as similar. Let's hope that's not the case this time around, and that healthcare issues remain high on the public policy agenda throughout the next 4 years. Our thanks to Assemblymember and congressional candidates Jim Kanin and Mike Honda, and we wish each of them the best of luck 2 weeks from today on November 7th. Our thanks to reporter Hallie Jordan of the San Jose Mercury News. Our thanks to the California Healthcare Foundation for underwriting this evening's event, and to its president, Mark Smith, for his role tonight and in the collaboration we have in general. Thanks to our City Year volunteers, and especially to all of you for joining us this evening. And now this meeting of the California Healthcare Foundation and the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley, part of the nation's largest public affairs forum, is adjourned.